Welcome to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm Sally Mock, and I'm joined by University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldine and former Capital newspaper reporter Chuck Johnson. And Chuck, Democrats held their annual Mansfield-Metcalf dinner last weekend, and one theme that emerged as a rallying cry was their effort to tie Republicans to extremism. And here's what Democratic Attorney General candidate Larry Gent had to say.
Never in the history of the civilized world has any political party or group anywhere sought to run the government by seeking to put it out of existence. They have given aid and comfort to the most scornful people in our midst, and it's time for them to go.
And Chuck, this isn't anything new as a tactic, but it might resonate this year with voters. What do you think?
It could. You know, we're not clear if he's referring to Donald Trump. I suspect he is, or the Tea Party folks in the Congress and also the state legislature. And Gent was a longtime state legislator who served with Tea Party members. But the way he said it, I think he's referring nationally to Trump and his supporters. But he doesn't, in the clip we heard, he doesn't say that. But it's definitely a tactic Democrats are using across the land to try to tie local or state Republicans to things that Trump has said.
Rob, the hope by Democrats is that the likely Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump, will be a drag on down-ballot candidates. And Senator John Tester, also at this dinner, tried to rally Democrats by having them guess who made statements that denigrate women. And he read the statement and then had them guess. Here's what he said.
There are 26,000 unreported sexual assaults in the military. What did these geniuses expect when they put men and women together? Nah, it was Trump. To force all frontline combat positions and special forces to integrate women into their units is reckless and dangerous. Zinke, you guys are damn good.
And Rob, he's trying to obviously tie Republican Congressman Ryan Zinke, who's being opposed by Democrat Denise Juno, to Trump, who does not poll well with women.
Yeah, he actually doesn't poll well with many people. If you look at what's coming out now, he has favorable rating that's in the mid to low 30s in recent polls, and an unfavorable rating.
Nationally,
right. We don't have any figures on Montana, but these are the national numbers. Favorables, mid to low 30s. Unfavorables are in the low to mid 60s and appear to be on an upward trajectory. And just one of the many criticisms that Donald Trump has received in terms of his comments and the way he conducts himself is some comments he's made about women. And to the extent that that can be placed upon Ryan Zinke in this race against Denise Juno, that could potentially help.
But Chuck, it's also true that Montanans can vote very differently for president than they do for their state candidates.
We're pretty notorious ticket splitters here, Sally. Just look back to the 2012 election. Mitt Romney carried the presidency in Montana, of course, lost nationally. At the same election, John Tester, a Democrat, was reelected by a fairly good margin over Republican Congressman Denny Rehberg. And Steve Bullock, the Democrat, was narrowly elected over Rick Hill, the Republican. And you can go back in time, and there are a number of examples where Montanans have elected governors and senators of the opposite party of how they voted for president. Now, perhaps this year will be different. Perhaps it won't. We'll have to see what happens.
Whatever those trends are that have played out in Montana historically, I think Democrats still have to look at Trump and what appears to be likely scenario that he is, in fact, the Republican nominee for president as a gift. Just taking a step back, you would expect that this would probably be a difficult cycle for Democrats. We're at the end of a second term for a Democratic president, which is frequently comes with a bit of fatigue for that president and for his party. And we have a candidate in Hillary Clinton, a presumptive presidential candidate in Hillary Clinton, who, for all her competence and experience, is not a very strong campaigner and has pretty weak favorable numbers herself, high unfavorable numbers. And so you see someone like Trump come along, and you got to think that this is a gift for Democrats to try to exploit. And I think that's what we're starting to see from them, from Mansfield-Metcalf, and we can expect to see more of that.
Chuck, we've spoken before about Governor Steve Bullock being criticized by Republicans for using the governor's plane to travel to official duties that were also simultaneous with campaign events. And the governor has now announced he will reimburse the state for part of the use of that plane. But that's not appeasing Republicans who are still unhappy about it.
Yes, he said he would reimburse about $2,700. And Republicans are saying that's a far cry. He should reimburse lots more. And the debate continues. It's a tricky issue in the sense, like, what is a legitimate governor's visit to a city and what is a legitimate campaign event and how should the expenses be shared? And I think we'll hear lots more about this in the remaining days of the campaign and probably at the next legislature, regardless of who the governor is. I suspect there'll be efforts to put in state law more specific guidelines as to what's legitimate and what should be reimbursed by the campaign.
And speaking of money and the appropriate use of it, Rob, the use of PAC money in the governor's race continues to be an issue as both sides accuse the other of soliciting money from outside groups. But not everyone thinks it should be a big deal. Here's what Denise Roth-Barber of the Helena-based National Institute on Money in State Politics, here's what she had to say, that implying that neither Governor Bullock nor Greg Gianforte, his challenger, is breaking the law.
Because they're both using legitimate, viable mechanisms for raising money, and they should just allow each other to do that. You know, I have to wonder how much Montanans actually really care about this particular spat between the two campaigns. I think what the public really wants to hear is why each candidate is best person for that job. And if there is going to be money spent, there just needs to be full transparency.
And transparency is the issue, isn't it, Rob, when you're talking about this kind of outside money?
I think she's spot on. Very well put. I think transparency is important. And I guess at a more basic level, there are rules of the game. And it's important to play by the rules. And both of these candidates, so far as we know, are playing by the rules. Nobody's alleging that they aren't. And so a lot of this is a contrived issue. And the candidates themselves certainly have had a significant role to play in making it an issue. And the media then takes that and runs. And we see a lot of stories in the paper about the fundraiser back in Washington and Bullock refusing to sign Gianforte's no PAC pledge. But there's nothing going on here that breaks any law or any rules. And I think the shame of it is that these candidates have already, early in the campaign, articulated some very different positions on the issues. They have different ideas about what the future of Montana should look like. And to the extent that we're obsessing over some of these fundraising issues that are 100% legitimate, we are not paying attention to those real and legitimate differences between these two guys.
Plus, voters, I think, rightfully believe that all candidates, pretty much, except maybe Bernie Sanders, are tainted by outside money.
I think that is the common perception. And of course, that's why we have these candidates paying so much attention to this issue and trying to make political points off of the NOPAC pledge and the trip to D.C. to raise money behind closed doors. It does resonate in a certain way with voters, but I think it is, at the end of the day, largely a distraction.
Chuck, a longtime fixture in Montana politics and a longtime Democratic legislator, Carolyn Squires of Missoula, has died. And she left a mark as a staunch advocate for the working class.
Yes, Carolyn was a licensed practical nurse and then later worked for the state AFL-CIO, and she never forgot her roots. She was an advocate for workers, an advocate for the poor, the hungry, and pretty unafraid to speak her mind and call out people that voted against legislation or budgets that would help working class people. And she was often grumpy. She didn't suffer fools gladly. But in the end, she was well respected by everyone because she was exactly who she was. She didn't pretend to be anyone else. And she served up until the session before the last one. She would have liked to run again, but she had health problems. But she was there since 87 and made a real impact as kind of the premier legislator standing up for the working people in Montana. And she'll be missed.
under that grumpiness was a wry sense of humor as well.
Absolutely. She could be intimidating, but then she could be very kind to people too. And I think she ended up having lots of friends on both sides of the aisle. She was respected for her integrity and standing up for what she believed.
You've been listening to Campaign Beat, our weekly political analysis program. I'm your host, Sally Mock, and I've been speaking with former Capitol reporter Chuck Johnson and University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldine. Have a great weekend, guys, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, Sally.